Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic. It's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982, and that does not make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new here tonight, I want to welcome you to AA, and I always call it God's Magnificent AA, the program that saved my life, and it's going to save yours, too, if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly you get a sponsor tonight, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy, and everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober. So I've stayed sober for 22 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West L.A., a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job, and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job of mine, and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to come. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes. I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one thing is talk to my sponsor. And Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes tonight. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor, why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, and was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of it as I stand here tonight. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I can tell you that my life has done nothing but totally, complete transfers, all that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. I talked to him this morning before I left L.A., and he said, well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe that as I stand here and I welcome you and I hope that you stay in, then I think I did without a doubt the most important thing I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life tonight. You guys did not used to be that with me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell. I could not even describe it. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And, you know, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis, I had a liver cirrhosis, I had ruptured esophageal varices, and I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children, I'd lost my husband twice. I don't really care about that, I want you to know. I lost my car, I lost my house, I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody, and I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought my nieces disease, I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. Absolutely devastated me, but did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I will learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about, many of us pursuing the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing, I was in the gates of pure insanity. I got sober almost into my coffin. And I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. As I stand here tonight, I cannot begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff. But, you know, like I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. When I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date. And there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people who had to go and smoke dope when I got sober. And, you know, if you're smoking marijuana in this room now, you're not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you right this minute. And I don't want to argue about it afterwards. Ask any old timer if you don't believe me. And if I have to change my date, then by God, so do you. But anyway, I got my current sponsor, and I tried to explain to him that where I'm from in Lincoln, it isn't that way anymore, but when I got sober, you could have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. And he rather quickly pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We have one date here to get my date changed. And I was such a smart aleck when I got my current sponsor, and I said, where does the book mention pot? He said, well, the book does mention pot. And I said, Clancy, I have read that book. He said, I talk about marijuana in that book. And he said, if I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety and never argue with me again? And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot. I said, that is not what that means. He said, quite frankly, my dear, I don't care what it means. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date. And my life has flourished, I got to tell you guys. But I'm delighted to be here in Missouri tonight. I did this conference about maybe 10, 11 years ago with my sponsor. And it's, you know, I'm glad that you're still here. I think you're still in the same hotel, if I remember correctly. But anyway, I'm also delighted that you don't have a glass plum. You can see your speaker. I had this terrible experience on the East Coast. I was out there giving a talk. And on my talk, my skirt fell off in front of 3,000 people. And they had this glass plum, you could actually see the speaker, and that makes me nervous anyway. And I had this black suit on with this wraparound skirt, and the button came down. I thought, my God, my skirt's going to fall on the floor. And it was too late, it was on the floor. But you guys, you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to wear underwear, and thank God I had some. What are you clapping for, Chris? I'm delighted to be here now. I really mean that. And thank you one more time for inviting me. Joy, thank you for picking me up from the airport. And, you know, there's a lot of beautiful ladies here tonight that came over to see me. And my grandbaby Ashley over there and my grandbaby Carrie from Kansas City. And welcome here tonight. And, you know, I know so many people in this room, Ann and Mike and Denise. I haven't seen her for many, many years. I used to sponsor her and she ran away from me, you know. But I see she's back here tonight and stuff. But anyway. You know, you guys, this has been the very best year of my sobriety, my 22nd year, and I want to share a little bit of that with you. You know, if you would have asked me New Year's Eve, a year ago on New Year's Eve, are your amends made in Alcoholics Anonymous? I would have said yes, and that would have been the absolute truth for me. I'm $86,000 out of debt in this program. I owe nobody nothing. No verbal amends, no financial amends. I'm home free here. All I got to do is go to meetings and read that book and pray and work with others and be committed here, and I'm going to be okay. But my amends are made in Alcoholics Anonymous. Where our book says that more will be revealed, folks. And I flew to Kansas City a year ago on New Year's Eve to give an AA talk. We were on the airplane, and air traffic control had held us for whatever reason. So we were circling the city, and I spied the Hyatt Regency Hotel, and I thought, oh, my God, there's the Hyatt Regency. And I remembered something I'd done about 30 years ago. You know, 30 years ago on Easter morning, I found myself in the Hyatt Regency glass elevator stark naked on Easter morning. And it landed on the first floor of the hotel, and here was this family standing in their Easter clothes. They were going to have brunch or something, and I will never forget the look on these people's faces as long as I live. And anyway, you know, I read my inventory to my sponsor, and I did not mention this. I'd done so much of this sort of thing, it wasn't any big deal, but I didn't even remember it. And so you're supposed to tell your sponsor. So I called up Clancy and said, well, get over there and make amends for you. Probably gave the place a bad name and stuff. And I thought, well, if I have time, I'll get that done. I did not have time. They kept me really busy. Went back to the airport on New Year's Day, and my flight was canceled. I thought, great, I can take a shuttle, go back to the Hyatt Regency, and make amends for what I did. Although I doubt if I can even find anybody on New Year's Day to even talk to. And boy, I was wrong about that, let me tell you. I sat down with the manager of the Hyatt Regency Hotel, and I told him what I'd done, and he laughed. He said, Karen, you know, stop. He said, you're not going to believe this. He said, 30 years ago, I was with my family here on Easter morning. My dad was actually manager of the Hyatt at that time. We were having Easter brunch, and the door opened up, and a naked woman got off the elevator. And he said, I was only 7 years old. I'd never seen a naked woman. I said, well, I'm sorry. I had to be your first one, but we take what we can get. And he said, and guess what? Mom and Dad are here this week. And I thought, oh, wonderful. You know. He said, let's have him come down and meet you. And I wanted to say, let's not. But I didn't say that. I said, whatever you want to do will be fine with me. And so Mom and Dad came down, and I thought, my God, they're probably 100 years old on walkers. They'll probably have a heart attack when they find out who I am. But one more time, I was wrong about that. I sat down with the loveliest people I've ever met before in my life, and they laughed. They said, Karen, we talked about you for years in the bars of the Hyatt Regency. And I thought, yeah, I bet you did too. And I said, well, I'm so sorry I embarrassed you and your family here all those years ago. What can I do to make that right? And they said, just don't ever do it again. I said, you know what, I can't think of any more disgusting than a 59-year-old woman getting out of a glass elevator stark naked. But so I did have to be taking that path in time soon. So as I stand here tonight, my amends are made in Alcoholics Anonymous. But it ain't midnight yet, folks. You never know what's going to happen around here. But, last May, I was over in Laughlin, Nevada, and I spoke at the Tri-State Roundup over there. And if you guys haven't experienced that, get over there next May. It's a fabulous event. They get about 8,000 people this thing. And we were hanging around the casino on Thursday night waiting for the meeting to start, and I hit a $10,000 slot is what happened. And I was to experience every promise in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in 5 seconds flat. I was knowing new freedom and new happiness, and fear of financial insecurity left me temporarily, and I was rocking. If you're new here tonight, that is not how you get the promises in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I swear to God, I got them all in 5 seconds flat. And it was really a great experience. Don Laughlin, who owns the Riverside Hotel over there, you know, when you hit a slot like that, you're going to get management's attention real quick. They want their money back is what they want. But he came down and he said, can we extend your stay? And I said, no, check will be fine. I'm going home Sunday. And he said, well, you know what? He said, you know, what are you doing here this week? And I told him, he said, oh, I'm going to come here that you speak. He said, I love to hear the AA speakers. Do you care? And I said, well, it's your hotel. You can do whatever you want to around here. And by God, he was in line the very next night to thank me. And it's so funny. He had to say it one more time. He said, are you sure we can't extend your stay? And I said, I'm positive. So I'm happy to report that I took that car, that money back to L.A., and I paid off my car, so I really am debt-free in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a great position to be in, let me tell you guys. But anyway, you know, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. I have a wonderful home there in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I want you to know that, and my mother wants you to know it, too, I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 13 years ago, and God, I miss her so much, you guys, I can't begin to tell you. And boy, you only get one, folks, and when they're gone, let me tell you. And I made amends to her many, many years ago. We had a wonderful relationship last few years of her life and stuff, but I just miss her terribly. And I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether he found A or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. So one more time tonight, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And I would give any in the world if my father were alive tonight, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who is Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of stuff, and made straight A's, never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and now she's retired and teaches school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love my sister very, very much tonight. And I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who was a fighter pilot in the Navy for many, many years, and my brother retired 3 years ago in August and did a 9/11 in Iraq and so forth. He's been called back in the service. And, you know, my brother is really old to be a fighter pilot. You guys, he's 51 years old. And we were growing up, I thought he was such a dork, I can't begin to tell you. Straight as an arrow, Mike, doesn't drink, doesn't use drugs, doesn't screw around. He was an embarrassment to me, if you want to know the truth. And tonight, I'm so proud of that man, I cannot begin to tell you. You wouldn't catch me over Iraq in any fighter plane, but neither one of these people are alcoholic. And I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their home state, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, to know the truth. They're high-successful people, and they bore me to tears. I love them, but they bore me to tears. And I have a couple kids who are 44 and 45 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. But you know what? Those couple of jerks have given me 5 of the most gorgeous grandbabies you have ever seen before in your life. And, you know, I hate to be a bragging grandmother as I stand here tonight. I detest people that do this, but when I do this, it's a whole different ballgame, let me tell you. I have a beautiful grandson. His name is Ryan, and mine is 14, soon to be 15 years old. And apparently, little Ryan is quite a gymnast, you guys. I knew he was good, but I know he was that good. And my Sunday's wife got a phone call from Budweiser out of St. Louis, Missouri, wanting to sponsor this kid and train him for the Olympics, you guys. And my son called me, and this kind of alcoholic I am. I jump from phone call to Olympic Stadium, gold medal around his neck, and what will I wear, you know, having just that quick. But I found myself telling my child, Jeff, you have to do what you think is right here. This is your son, not mine. I wanted to shriek at him and say, let him go, you idiot. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. But I kept my mouth shut. Once my A has taught me to keep my mouth shut, and it really turned out well this time. And he said, Mom, he said, he's so little to be going away. And he said, Mom, we don't know what to do. What would you do, Mom? Now I'm on, folks. And I said, well, Jeff, I don't think anybody knows what they would do for sure unless it happens to him. But I said, you know, we have a dear friend, Lincoln's a child psychologist. And I said, why don't you have Chris come over and talk to Ryan and see what he thinks? And my son did exactly that. And yet that child psychologist told my son and his wife, let him go. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. He's a very stable young man. So I'm happy to report here tonight that my little grandson is down in Norman, Oklahoma, trained at Nadia Comaneci Chimbart Connors Clinic down there. And actually, he's in Athens, Greece right now, but he's not participating, but they're all over there and so forth. And, you know, Ryan was going to make the Junior Olympics team this year and took a silver at the Pan Am Games and stuff. And we all had a house rented for Athens, Greece, and we were all going to go over there, 36 of us and stuff. And he fell about 2 months ago, and he has an AC joint separation, but it's not entirely one. So they're still working that arm, and hopefully he's going to go back and be able to train some more and so forth. But, you know, I'm so proud of that kid. I can't begin to tell you. I'm so proud of all my grandkids. And, you know, our book says that great events will come to pass for us and countless others. And I want to share a very great event in my life with you. It won't be in your life, but it's most certainly in mine. You guys, when I got sober, my family wanted absolutely nothing to do with me. They held the crap they were going to take off me years before I quit drinking. Had to walk into their own sanity, you know, the truth. And so, then I get from my family is icing on the cake, let me tell you guys. And, you know, through making amends around here and sponsorship and the things we do, it's all turned around for me now. But it took a long time for it to happen. In my case, that's a good thing. But on my 20th AA birthday, I got a phone call about 10:30 at night, and it was Ryan's very first day down in Norman, Oklahoma, and he said, "Oh, Grandmother, I'm so sorry to call you so late." And I said, "It is never too late to call your grandmother. Don't you ever think that." And he said, "Oh, Grandma, I wanted to wish you a happy 20th AA birthday." And you guys, I just stood there and cried like a baby. And he said, "Oh, Grandma, I didn't make you cry." And I said, "You didn't make me cry, Ryan. I'm so happy that you called me." And he said, "Oh, Grandma, we're so proud of you." And I thought, "Oh, stop," you know. But anyway, the same thing happened on AA birthday number 21, AA birthday number 22, and I will tell you, I wouldn't trade those phone calls for that 10,000. Well, that's not quite true, but you know what I'm talking about. What a precious gift in my life that was. So I thank you in Alcoholics Anonymous for giving my family back. I thank you for that. You know, and sometimes people's families never come back, and I learned that early on, and my sponsor taught me. He said, "You know what? Other doors are going to open for you." And I've had reported tonight that many more people in my life before my family ever came back, but I'm also super glad that they are back and stuff. I missed them terribly. But, you know, I grew up in Nebraska. I was a disruptive jerk when I was growing up, always in trouble, always kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I really hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I heard that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys, but I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. Remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning? It made me feel like I belonged. I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm going to meet about Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and I honor this podium by talking about alcoholism up here. I used a lot of drugs, too, made that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, there just wasn't a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee you, I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there is some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me, absolutely. Nothing scared me. I think I wasn't supposed to be doing it. I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name that, and I love them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here tonight. I can just feel it, you know. That's a one thing, girls, I learned about Southern California, it's got so many sick men, and I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. And, you know, you guys, I'm 60 years old, and I have a boyfriend. You better well believe I have a boyfriend. He lives in New York, and I live in L.A. That's where we get along so well and stuff. But anyway, I have to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee many, many years ago giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, A, walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you. And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd phone to Nashville and ask you." You know, I hear some women get this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. Do all their drinking rooms that shoot through into the keyhole with an eyedropper. I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that feeling in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room tonight, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of our book, It says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have. Then it goes on to say, because you can literally avert death and misery for others. And I found that to be very, very true in my sobriety. So if I offend anybody here, I don't want to hear about it afterwards. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old and I had to get married. In my day, girls, you had to get married. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about that. That's just what we did. And I was 16, he was 17. I couldn't cook, I couldn't clean, I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quick found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis. He used to come home and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would laid one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And somebody in that family had to get a job. And I didn't finish junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln. And the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I'd love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you now from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have 1 ounce of willpower when it comes to my disease. But when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here tonight and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession. I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people I work with under ordinary circumstances. And what I had to tell you now is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank, and with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, ran with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that'll do a lot for your security if you're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to challenge the general way what our drinking was like. And you get the general idea real quick of what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking in about 5 seconds, if I know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And I'm not talking about that piece of crap they had 9 years ago. I'm talking about the real Woodstock. And there will never be another one, trust me on that. The kids from the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I'm quite sure. And you know why there'll never be another one, you guys? That one wasn't supposed to happen to begin with, but anyway, New York got wind they're going to have this big event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you're not going to have this concert. They started hiring people from Nebraska. They thought they'd be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first drunk to sign up for this deal. And find 9 girls that I worked for to join me and met all these doctors from New York, and they were at Woodstock. I never seen so much alcohol in one place in my entire life. You could have easily floated a bathroom problem whatsoever, and the drugs was like a candy store, and everybody was sharing narcotics on everybody else. And we had this great big semi-truck on that back lot of Woodstock. That was our hospital park back there. And I recall being in that semi the entire week. But I do recall what it was like to stand from the stage at night that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe, Santana, those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life one little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for... I'd have traded Janice for Clancy any day of the week if he wanted the truth. That's not true. That's a big fat lie. Do not tell him I said that. I was just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janice Joplins. But, you know, drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lot for me to say not the same thing but that. But I remember the fun. I remember the pain that it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't begin to tell you. And I'm going to give you a couple of drinking stories and get my recovery here. You know, I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm supposed to be doing. I've been to horse races in Omaha, Nebraska with a couple of nurses that I worked with. And the girls told me, they said, Karen, the horse race I've been with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln. And I said, well, run along. I'd met you guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa. These guys wanted to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, you know, the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyre, Nebraska, a little bit town of about 200 people. And I found out something very interesting tonight about Palmyre, Nebraska, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I found that out. And there I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, walking stark naked down the highway, in my high heels carrying my purse, and it was February in Nebraska, and it's a tad bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that. Tonight I know why ducks' feathers freeze, I can assure you. And of all the luck, the first person I ran to was a highway patrolman. And, you know, in California where I live, they have a partner. In Nebraska, they hardly ever have a partner. And they're a little bit smarter out there than California. But anyway, this guy stops his squad car, rolls down his window, he turns on his siren, and he looked at me and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the dumbest thing ever they say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. He said, lady, you get in this squad car and you sit down and don't you touch me. Well, you know, one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop and I said, I'm not getting in your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm going to tell you guys that that made me madder than anything that was going on to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out of the Palmyre, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I will guarantee you. They were very busy night at that downtown jail. And I have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown, booked in that cop's raincoat. You know, cops keep raincoats and trunks to the car for these occasions. And I went downtown, booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him. All the delightful antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning, standing there in my raincoat, when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, came walking up to me, and I didn't know he was working there that day. And he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms. I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody, you know. And I honest to God believe that, you know. And that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that, and I just blew it off like it was no big deal. But I did learn one thing from that event I want to share with you, and this is all that I learned. Don't ever drink with men from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and I kept right on drinking. You know, and the drunk driving charges, the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged with. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need to get even with him for all the things he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. I'm certainly not proud as I stand here tonight. And, you know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. See why they love me in Nashville, folks? But anyway, I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys, it's stronger to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. I said, okay, fine, then I won't tell anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell those people to see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I will kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night, and I happened to be sober this night for some reason, and I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff, and I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And I will say, though, that when the shoe's under the foot, though, it's fine with me. And And that guy came up and indicated that to me. And I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, you know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he said it for hours, you guys, his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I can tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. And this is many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You know, Mrs. Bobbin has nothing on me, I can assure you. I was a form before she ever got started. I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I remember this guy, I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again. This guy, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place, man, I have super glue, and I laughed about it and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. We had a telephone by our bed there in our bedroom there in Lincoln. He called the police, and the cops were out in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they do not seem to think things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it would not surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which maybe the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? I looked at those cops and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ's sakes. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did, and they took me to jail, I might add. It turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper in about that at Creighton, and anybody in this room is thinking about going to medical school, or you can read about it if you want to. I'd always want a paper in about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something of mine shut. He would have, too, I got to tell you. I'm sorry, but he would have. For those of you know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 3 years ago. It was on the national news, and I was on the freeway in Los Angeles, and I heard on the news, I had a wreck when I heard it. I thought, my God, better her than me, I got to tell you. But, you know, like I said earlier, we have an amends step in this program, and my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get on that airplane, get there, and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. I'm telling anybody in this room tonight, when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we're able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you, for the first time, my sobriety, the promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous came true in my life. You know what else I found about that? Motives mean nothing here, folks. My motives sucked on that one, let me tell you. But I still got the promises, so go figure. It's action, not motives that count in Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I have to tell you guys a funny story. I almost forgot to tell this. I went up to Lompoc Prison about a year and a half ago to give an AA talk, and as we all know, it's a men's federal penitentiary in Central Coast, California, and I drove up there. They had this monthly speakers thing, so they asked people to come up and speak, and I drove up there, and you have to go to the guard tower, and you push the button, and they say, who are you, and what is your business? And I told them, they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any weapons on you, any guns, knives, explosives? And I said, no, and they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any super glue on you? But first time in my life, I was totally speechless, you know. We were up in the guard tower laughing. It was so funny. You guys should have seen them. And the prisoners put them up to it and stuff. And I said, well, no, as a matter of fact, I don't. And they said, well, you can come on in. The prisoners took me to their meeting room, and they had this blackboard with a great big circle with a red slash. It says, no super glue in here tonight. It was so funny. I just loved it. You never know what's going to happen now, Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I divorced that guy, and I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse, and I've studied alcoholism. I knew all about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time tonight what our book says is so true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing with this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. We do have one that's called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 23 years sober. And the day he came to me in the hospital told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you, Karen. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue in husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything you do in Lincoln's in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you're either going to a treatment center or you longer had this job. Well, you guys, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved more than in the whole world, and I cannot say it enough tonight. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln. And what I'm ready to share with you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from any podium in Alcoholics Anonymous. It took me years of my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself still in drugs in that nursing home. And it wasn't because I like drugs. It has nothing to do with anything. I was physically addicted to alcohol. I had to have this stuff now. I couldn't go more than 3 hours without drinking. I couldn't drink at work, so I started stealing narcotics. It's just that damn simple. And I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium. I'd get my hands on it. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly mistaken. And the day came to me, the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. Now, you take good care of the patients. You're a great nurse, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange, too, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange, too. And I threw my keys at them, and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that. Ooh, I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly, and I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. The very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up. And that's why I'm an active, active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, the day came for me when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from that hospital, and this has got to be without a doubt the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotic keys, and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again, we're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other job should have done too, as a matter of fact. And long story short here tonight, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story short and short here tonight, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I've traveled the Midwest, I've prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes, I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person, you thinking that kind of crap. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that didn't happen in the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happened to me I would not repeat from this podium tonight, but I'm sure that you have the general idea. And 2 years went by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I got to tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live, and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick, I just passed down the streets is what happened to me. But before that happened, I remember thinking to myself, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area, and I remember thinking, 2 years ago, I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those folks felt the same way when they arrived there. Like I said, I can't tell you much about it all. I woke up in an intensive care ward, the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital I worked at for 19 years, and I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds when I got sober, and I was coming off a quarter or whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That is a lot of booze, that's a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying to, let me tell you. I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly that were draining a foot off my liver. I had IVs going, and I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I shook, and I died, and I died for 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses and demand they give me narcotics for this withdrawal, and they wouldn't give me a damn thing. They said, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You need to fill in one of those tremors, and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me, and I'll be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got 10 members of AA to come and sit with me. And, you know, I just want to say something real quickly because I feel so strongly about this because it saved my life. Once in a while in AA, I hear people say, not very many people, and I don't hear it that often, but when I hear it, I want to throttle them by the neck. They say things like, we don't go unless the alcoholic calls us. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing here 22 years sober tonight. I never made any damn phone call. Where did that crap come from? If it's good enough for our co-founders, I think it's good enough for us. I think Bill called Bob, as the story goes. I don't think Bob called Bill. I hope I never forget where I'm coming from around here. My responsibility statement does indeed say, when anyone in here reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. The nurses reached out, the alcoholics responded, and I have to believe tonight is a direct result that I'm standing here 22 years sober. But anyway, I just love these people, and they never left me day or night for 30 solid days. And they say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all you got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's what's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date, and they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked in official treatment from that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys. Let me tell you, and thank God I went to give them. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I turned on you like you cannot even believe when you started telling me what to do. I used you so desperately on day one, but 30 days there was a whole different ballgame, let me tell you. And you know, where I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize an orange person, I can assure you. And they used to bring the patients over to the hospital and they'd say, look at her, see what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking? Look at her. I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that? But you guys, you know what, in retrospect tonight, I am really glad they did that. I get to think about that before I pick up any drink, but I was on a quick study in that inpatient 30-day program due to my rotten behavior. I was in there for 7 long months. That's a long time to be an inpatient 30-day program, folks. And I completed that inpatient program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way you teach people in AA to do it. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We can do what we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And you guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand here tonight. But not in 1982. I could have killed us on what these people thought. And you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love them, you old-timers and Alcoholics Anonymous. They literally saved my life. And boy, they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well, and I'll be internally grateful. But this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me up an AA meeting one day. He said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they need the book and they need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska next weekend. His name is Clancy. This man speaks. And you're going to ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I know about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. But I told this old-timer, I said, who do you think you are that you're going to tell me is going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go this Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. I paid that money back, too, by the way. I did pay it back. I did. Didn't I, Mark? I did, too, pay it back. And I will tell you guys, from Podium and Connie, Nebraska, that Clancy literally put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I'm asking. And I found myself walk across that convention floor and asked that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazy I never thought of being. And I thought to myself, what did he say that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked me if he brought me, if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I stood in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel, and he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you. And he said, Karen, I like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you'll probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You are going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You become an active, vital member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me, defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is there in my recovery, really, the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said 2 words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people, yes, sir. Trust me, I do not. One more time, God do with me, I can't do it for myself. Respect's got to start with me somewhere. You might as well start with my sponsor, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. One of my sponsors, a lot of women in that town. I am not bragging about that. It is not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women is still sober today, with the exception of one, and she died in a car accident. She was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I tried to tell this man, I cannot get that kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get up to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, tell those people you've been sober in AA for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room tonight. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I asked him for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 18 years ago last April, when one more time I was stripped in front of the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And that is a gift from AA. You know what? Let me thank you so much for clapping. But you guys, you know what? That is your victory. That is clearly your victory, not mine. You with me every single second of the way with that. I never would have gotten it back and stuff. And I thank you for that. But, you know, I went out to visit Southern California. I fell in love with Southern California AA. And I found myself on the telephone telling my sponsor one day, I want to move to Los Angeles, go on the Pacific Group, work at UCLA in the operating room, be on 2 of their transplant teams, their heart liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I deserve none, but by God, I'm taking all of them. You know, before I sit down here tonight, I got a couple of really quick stories to tell you guys. I've been asked to tell these stories. And thank you so much for asking me, because I get to read them all over again. You know, my sponsor asked me early on, he said, Karen, where are you at with your, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program, but where are you at with all that? Where are you at with the God? I said, Clancy, I don't believe in God. I cannot do that stuff. And he flipped open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he showed me where I get a daily reprieve contingent on a spiritual maintenance of the power greater than myself. And he went on to tell me, there's going to come a day in your sobriety when I can't help you, AA can't help you, you will have no mental defense against that first drink, no human power can help you, and you are dead from the disease of alcoholism. You better start getting a God in your life, little girl, and you better start praying. And I said, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning, I want you to get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. Do not pray for things, pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. And I started doing that. And I still lived in Nebraska, And I talked to clients every day on the telephone from Nebraska to California. I'd say, this is not working for me. I don't feel any connection with God. He said, are you staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And in 1985, I found myself in Montreal, Canada, at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you guys haven't experienced a World Conference, it's something that none of us should ever miss. I hope to see you all in Toronto next summer and so forth. But anyway, I drove up from Nebraska with six people. I sponsored myself. There were seven people in that car. I would never do it again in a million years. We drove straight through from Lincoln to Montreal. We had no place to stay. Those hotels were like $200 a night. We had $100 a piece, and we had absolutely no place to stay. But by God, we were going to that World Conference. If we had to sleep outside, we were going to go to that World Conference. And we got up there, up the convention center, we found an apartment to rent for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting. And there was 64,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. And I looked around myself. I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. They were down there on the football field practicing for a flag ceremony. Alcoholics from all over the world carrying their national flags. And when the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw all those people go absolutely crazy. I looked around myself. I saw those old-timers, all the new people, all the people in between. And everybody just had tears of gratitude rolling down their cheeks and stuff. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel what these people are feeling? I too wanted to love A, and I could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my life, I got tears in my eyes and did not try and stop. And for the first time, with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me to love this program as much as these people do. And I will tell you guys, in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage that we see when ready to see, we hear when ready to hear, not before. I also believe that the actions my sponsor gave me got me to that point. It's like, do it till you believe it. And for one solid second, my world stopped. I remember that woman that was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, who literally could not quit drinking, who literally could not. And there she was, 2.5 years sober. I personally believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is divinely inspired. How could it not be? How could it not be? And you hang around here long enough, you'll come to believe that too and stuff. But I've taught that God every day sincerely since, because I believe what my sponsor has taught me. I get a daily reprieve, and that's all that I get. You guys, I worked at UCLA for many, many years. I was there for 15 years and had back surgery, and I had to get out of the operating room. My back surgery was successful, but I had all this scar tissue, and I just cannot do that kind of nursing anymore. So I thought, you know, what am I going to do for a living? And I now work for Zimmer Surgical Instrument Company, and you know what? I'm glad I'm not in that operating room anymore. I love that job and stuff, but I'm still there every day. I service four different hospitals for instruments, and it's just something I never thought I'd ever want to do and so forth, but I've been doing that for 4 years. But, you know, when I was at UCLA, I was about 10, 11 years sober, we had this terrible nursing crisis in Southern California, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you, and I was always the first one to complain about it, I'm sorry to say, and, you know, like we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, I was a bitch is what I was. But anyway, I worked 72 hours, and I worked the night shift over there for many, many years. That's when we do all our transplants and so forth. But anyway, this one particular night I want to tell you about, I went to a meeting early in the evening, I went home and I went to bed early, I had the night off, and the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, I'm not answering that damn phone call. It's either my boss want me to come to work, or somebody I sponsor want to whine to me about something. And you know, my sponsor taught me early on, you have got to do what God gives you to do. When that phone rings, pick up the phone, somebody's in trouble. You start answering that telephone under any condition. So I've always done that stuff. So I picked up the phone, and sure enough, it was my boss. And she said, I've got 18 people sick over here tonight. We're going to do a liver transplant on a girl that's about 3 years old. I have nobody to do it. I need you to come over here and help me. I know you've worked 72 hours. I don't even want to hear it, Karen. Just get over here and help me. And I thought, I can't even think straight. I'm so tired. And the phone went dead. And, you know, she just told me to get over work. But anyway, I was going to call Clancy, but I don't want to talk to Clancy about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I know that he told me nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen, to say, well, there's a first time for everything, Clancy, you know. But I just went to work, and I'm so glad that I did the most precious thing happening. This is what why you should do what's in front of you. This is it, folks. But anyway, I got over there and I sent my orderly upstairs to bring our little patient down, a little girl dying from this strange liver thing and needed a transplant. And we had a jet come to New York with a liver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. So this guy called me in the back and he said, come out front and get your little patient. You're not going to believe all the people with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice that they have the support. I was so crappy, you guys. And I went out front to get my patient. And there was like 80 people with this family. I thought how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time, if you want to know the truth. And the next thing I noticed was the mom. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And I looked at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And I ever so gently fell in love with this little baby girl. And she's so sick, she left her head off the pillow. She was so sick and dying from some strange liver thing. And in her little arms, she had a bear, and she had a blanket wrapped around that bear, hanging on him for dear life. And I remember thinking to myself, and you didn't want to be here. You didn't want to be here, you selfish person. I thought, I'm going to be the best nurse I've ever been before in my life tonight. And by God, I was too, but... Anyway, we sent the family out there. I've been over and I talked to her and I said, oh, you brought your little baby bear down to surgery and tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear, you know. Anyway, we sent the family out the waiting room and that mom and dad were in absolute hysterics, let me tell you guys. And this little girl looked at me and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I've learned in this program, I was able to tell that little baby the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much. And that seemed to settle her down a little bit and stuff. And you know, we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA, you guys, that loves to play with the kids. He is just a delight to work with. So when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started, and his bag was called Bear Juice. She thought that was real funny. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep. And it was really quite painless for us, you know the truth. But I must tell you that 6-hour transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby due to blood loss. I've never seen a team of people pull together like we did that for that baby that night. And 6 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. She'd lost a tremendous amount of blood. And, well, we said some prayers on that one, let me tell you. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule at UCLA. You may not get involved with these transplant patients. Like they want to know where the organs come from. We cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. Now, I'll tell anybody in this room tonight that I'm real good at breaking rules. And I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing. I'm not going to talk to anybody. So when she was 6 days post-op, I went to that baby's room. I opened the door to that child's room. And you guys, I could not believe was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd left since her surgery. She was jumping up and down her crib. She had diapers hanging around her knees. She had a baby bottle in one hand. She put that bear in the other arm, and she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And I just stood in that hall, and I just cried like a baby. It is not cool to see the nursing staff bawl. And that whole room full of people were in there. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And it all made sense to me now. And I was in that room like a flash. And I asked the mom, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 80 people had driven 500 miles to be with his family. They were not from the LA area. And they showed me one more time what this thing is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all it's about. And I was impressed, let me tell you. And I asked the mom, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. I thought, oh my God, her baby up for the first time. What a fabulous birthday present, Stephen. I watched this little girl, and she stopped dead in her tracks. She said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. And I had my scrub clothes on and scared the hell out of her is what I did. And I said, I didn't come up here to hurt you. I came here to see how you're doing. You guys, she gave me her little bear. And she said, you take him home. He's so sick, he needs a nurse to take care of him. And I know why she gave me the bear to get me away from her, but I could pretend like she wanted me to heaven. I told the mom, I said, I can't take that baby's bear home. My God, that bear went through this baby's liver transplant. We had it right by her little head, her entire surgery in a plastic bag. And I said, please, I can't do that. And she said, Karen, she wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And that bear was my most prized possession from Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years. But then it got to be too damned important to me. It gets to being too important, folks. We got to get rid of it. Let me tell you, my little granddaughter says to me, Grandma, can I have that bear? And I said, it's Grandma's bear, Brandy. And she says, she knows the whole story. And she said, oh, Grandma, please. And I said, Grandma, I'll buy you 100 bears. That's my bear. And she said, but I don't want those. I want that one. I said, it's Grandma's bear. I thought, I can't believe I said that to my granddaughter. And you know what? It got so bad for me, I had to talk to my sponsor about it. What's a 50-year-old woman talking to her sponsor about a bear for? You know, my sponsor told me, give her the damn bear. Quit being so selfish. You got the memory. Give it away. You have to, you know, keep it. You got to give it away. And I thought, that's it. I'm changing sponsors. That's the last straw. I'm happy to report tonight that bear sits in Lincoln, Nebraska on her dresser. She's 22 years old now. She has her own family, and she's taking very, very good care of my bear. So I'll go visit him when I'm in Nebraska next weekend. But anyway, Band-Aid's intact. He's still there, you know. But anyway, I stood in the hospital room, and I thought, I need to reciprocate here. Obviously, I was not prepared for a birthday party. And I remember something was in my pocket that Clancy gave me when I was 5 years sober. I was like 11 years sober when this happened. You know, I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say. I could not seem to find the woman that was special enough, in my opinion, to give my 5-year medallion to. And the reason that it's in my pocket, night at work, there's a narcotic case next to that medallion. I don't tell anybody in this room tonight, when I open that cupboard sometimes, my eyes are like firecrackers, and I can grab and remember where I come from here. But anyway, I knew I'd found the woman, and I said, please take it, I want you to have it. And she said, Karen Clancy gave you that. My God, I can't take that. And I said, please, I want you to have it. And I really, really meant that. That's what you eventually do for me around here and stuff. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake from the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. I got Clancy on the telephone. I've never seen him so excited about anything before or since. Within about 3 hours, he had about 50 cars in front of UCLA. And I cannot begin to tell you how proud I was to take those people to my home group and Alcoholics Anonymous and the Pacific group. There's been no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know that baby is doing very, very well. And the point I'm trying to make here, I could have missed the whole damn thing, folks, if I wouldn't have picked up the telephone. How many times in my life have I missed stuff because I wouldn't take a simple action like answering the telephone? You know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than where our 12th tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperate as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love this program more than even the whole world, and it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, I'm going to shut my mouth here right on time. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in Columbia, Missouri tonight. I think that but for the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.